Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker here, along with my co-host, Matt. And we are back after a week off. Took a week off for Thanksgiving. Hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving, times with family. Hopefully you didn't cheat too much on your diets, but maybe a little bit because it was a holiday. How was your Thanksgiving, Matt?
It was... Well, let's put it this way. I'm glad to be back, right?
Well, you travel for Thanksgiving, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, we do. We do travel. I will say, you know, we had, you know, I'm just going to put my dirty laundry out there. We had a little family argument walking in the door, which was... So here was the deal. We had a house reserved, and you know, I don't think it's that big a deal to share this. We had a house reserved for like a year, and my brother decided to call my wife and had a little bit of an issue with the cost. So without consulting me, my wife had canceled the reservation. And so that kind of upset some of the other members of the family, including myself. And so when we all arrived, it was kind of tension, but we ended up in the middle of Oklahoma. So the house looked pretty cool. I mean, it was like a colonial southern type house, right? So it looked pretty cool. But it's in the middle of Oklahoma, and everywhere you look was dirt, okay? So it just, you know, not the pretty mountains that we were going to be around and the gorgeous trees and all that. So there was some family tension when we all got there, and we weren't in the door 30 seconds, and the argument ensued, and we had to kind of calm the family members down a little bit and said, hey, this is going to be fine. We're going to get through this. It's not that big a deal, you know, that type of thing. But so that's how my Thanksgiving started. So I'm glad to be home after that. How was yours?
Mine was great. I don't think it was filled with as many arguments as yours, doesn't sound like.
Right.
It was good. Hit both families, ate some good food. So can't complain.
Good. Well, it like I said, everything worked out. We ended up having a nice family Thanksgiving dinner, and everything was pretty kosher after that. And, you know, we had some, us and the family did what my wife loves doing best, which is shopping. And so we did some shopping and got some Christmas presents and stuff like that. So it turned out, you know, the back end of it turned out to be pretty fun.
So, well, good.
Yeah.
Good. Glad you still enjoyed it. So since we took a week off, we didn't have a Chiefs prediction last week. They beat the Las Vegas Raiders in quite a miraculous fashion after a last-second fumble.
Tell you what,
man. It looked like the Raiders were going to win.
I tell you what. I mean, it has been... I think someone's going to have their world cave in. Because they are just finding ways to win that seem to have a little bit of luck involved.
It does. It seems like that, but they keep stringing them along other than that one Bills loss. This week, they are at home, Sunday Night Football. The Chargers are coming into town. What do you think is going to happen, Matt?
I'm going to pick the Chiefs. But I think it's going to be like, let's make it 17-16.
Okay. I'll also take the Chiefs, although I do kind of have a bad feeling about this one. The only reason that I won't is because they've got a new left tackle this week. They've got that guy they traded for from the Cardinals coming in, and they said he's going to start and he's ready to go. So if they fix their left tackle problems, that's going to make a huge difference.
Right.
And I'm going to go out on a little limb, say that with that left tackle problem fixed, the offense is humming. I'm going to take them 27-20.
Okay.
They score a few points.
Well, I will say that I have the same gut feeling about this game, that something, if they lose, I'm not going to be surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, hey, we'll see. We found with them that anything can happen, quite literally anything. So
all I know is you don't want to be in a close game with the Chiefs. Okay. Yeah. If you're going to put them out, you better blow them out.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's true. So we move on now. We actually have two things we want to hit on for our fifth focus here. First one, I don't know. I mentioned this video to Matt, and he said he saw it too. I don't know how many of you saw this, but there was a video circulating around this week of a 100-year-old man, Orville Rogers, who ran a 60-meter dash. I guess they had like a senior citizen track meet, and it was all elderly people.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular individual, he was 100 years old, and he ran a 60-meter dash, and he just blew everyone away. You have these other 100-year-olds that are kind of like limping down the track, and he's just scooting along. He ran it in 19 seconds.
That's pretty damn good.
And I found out after further research, the video was from 2018, but it kind of went viral this week. 100 years old, 19 seconds, sprinting a 60-meter dash. That's pretty amazing.
That is pretty amazing. And I have started to follow some pages that are basically, because I've picked up several of my clients are in their senior years. And so I've been doing quite a bit of research, you know, when you have a different set of circumstances when you're training someone who's in their senior years. And you know, range of motion becomes a huge issue. And, you know, and that's one of the things that as you get older, you tend to lose, and you want to try to keep that. So one of the things that I started following, I've come across these pages where I've seen these seniors, they're 60, 70, 80 years old, doing incredible things. There was a guy that's in his 80s that set a PR in the deadlift. Just recently, I think his name was Jose, or it was, he was Hispanic. I know that. But he set a PR in deadlift, and it was like 300 some pounds, you know, at 80 some years old. So, you know, it's kind of indicative as if you take care of your body and you eat right, you can go well into your later years and be independent.
Well, there's a much larger disparity the older you get, I found.
Oh, massive. Right?
You know, you're in your 20s, like, yeah, there are some people that are way more able than others in terms of feats of strength and athleticism.
Right.
But we're talking about 100 years old. This guy, you know, nearly an all-out sprint on the track versus the vast majority of people, I don't know what the percentage would be, but the vast majority of people don't even live that long. I mean, there are people who, you know, people who don't even make it to 70. And 30 years after a lot of people are already dead, this guy is not only still living, but still sprinting and winning records in track and field.
I know. It's crazy.
And so there's that huge disparity of, I mean, I would say if you can still sprint at 100 years old, you're still pretty able-bodied. You can still go do things. You're not necessarily, you're limited, but not severely limited on what you can do. So you've added a lot of years to your life where you can actually enjoy it versus somebody who either is gone by 70 or who is unhealthy to the point where they can't do much by that age.
Right. Yeah, no, 100%. I think that, you know, you talked about this disparity, right? I started seeing disparity when I went to my last class reunion.
Mm.
You know, that was only my 25th class reunion, and I was shocked about where I was and where everyone else was. I'm like, wow, this guy was our college football star, and he looks terrible. you know, and so, yeah, I mean, yeah, you got to put in the work. You have to eat right. You know, you have to continue to work hard to maintain your fitness. And so it's just kind of one of those things where, you know, as you get older, you're right, that disparity gets wider and wider and wider.
Yeah, so we have a lot of people who will come in, say they have a short-term goal of lifting a certain amount of weight. It even could be, not that we would coach them, but somebody who wants to run a marathon or something, right? People have short-term goals, and they can pretty easily find the blueprint to get to achieve that goal, right? If someone came in and said, oh, I want to bench 300 pounds, Matt, you'd be like, okay, here, do this. Then we need to do this, and we need to do this. And you'd have a plan going forward. But if somebody came in and they said, you know, I don't have any major short-term goals, but my goal is that when I'm 100, I can beat that guy's record in sprint.
Right.
So, I mean, how do you go about putting someone on a path to be able to do something like that many, many years, if not decades down the road?
Yeah, I would have to think about that, because, you know, to put someone on a path, you know, to make choices that puts you in that position, you have to make choices to be in that position, 100%.
And there's a certain element of circumstance, right?
Sure.
But preparing for that.
Well, think about it. I think that I'm going to give some credence, and I love your opinion on this, Parker. I would give some credence to genetics. You know, I don't want to give all, you know, hey, it's just genetics that he can do that. I don't believe that. But, you know, I think some people are predispositioned to have a better chance of doing that because of their genetics. But, I guess you could think about the last powerlifting meet we went to. How many people my age were there?
Or very few.
Well, think about how many people were there between 50 and 60. Or even
maybe 50. A couple.
Yeah, a couple. And then there was one guy that was between 60 and 65. So, and then you had a very full set of lifters between 20 and 35. So, you know, so you those are people that, the people that were in those later years that can be in a, to do something like that, they've made choices well in advance to be in that position, okay? To be in a position to, and we have some, a few people here that are, you know, I'd say in their 40s and 50s that have made that choice to be in shape that I see in the gym. But it's not a lot. So it's kind of a question of, you know, there's probably like cultural influences. There's probably, our obviously our nutrition plays into that massively. So yeah, I mean, it's probably some choice, some genetics, lack of access to or understanding nutrition. So, you know, I train a guy, you might have known him, Chris here. I train, work on his knees, and he's 50, early 50s, and he's made the choice to stay healthy, and he looks great. You know, he's barrel chested and, you know, pretty trim, pretty lean. And I've been talking to him and his wife. They know all about the same things that we do as far as nutrition, because they put in the time and the effort to learn it. You know, so I'm confident what he's going to be like when he's in his 60s, 70s, and 80s. So I think it's, you know, as far as genetics, though, you'd probably agree that, you know, it plays a role, but it's not, how much do you think it plays?
I think genetics is a factor, but I don't think it's a factor to necessarily be considered. And here's the reason. If it is genetics, you can't change it.
Right.
So what's the point in worrying about it?
Right.
You know, you want to optimize the things that you can control.
Right.
If it's a genetic factor, then it's a genetic factor. But you still need to make the best decisions you can, regardless of your genetics.
Right. Right. Well, and that's 100%, because I think, you know, I have people of all varying levels of ability. And when they come in, I don't, you know, obviously I don't give them something that my higher end athlete can do, but I'm going to push them to what their abilities are, and I don't allow for those excuses to say, well, it's my genetics, you know.
Exactly. It should never be used as an excuse. Genetics is never an excuse to, I mean, some people may be slightly different than others because they're genetics, but we're not talking about vast differences like, oh, I'm, you know, destined for a life of being overweight because of my genetics. That doesn't exist.
Right.
Yeah. So what I would think about it is a goal is a goal, right? Some goals maybe are more short-term, some are more long-term. But if somebody had a goal of down the road, they want to be able to do something. You know, they want to be able to keep that longevity many decades into their 70s, into their 80s. I would approach it the same way as a goal somebody had that they wanted to accomplish, you know, next week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take you, for example, Matt. If all you cared about was achieving a 400-pound bench press, which for a while there, that was it. You've kind of backed off from that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But if that was your only goal, then you would, 24 hours a day, every decision you made, you would think about that goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it would play a factor in basically every decision that you would make.
Right.
Well, you have to think about that the same way then when it comes to a goal that's, even if it's decades in the future. If my goal is to be in good enough shape to sprint when I'm 100, then I need to think about every decision I make every day for the next multiple decades is with that goal in mind.
Right.
What's going to be the best decision for that goal? And that's, I think, the best way to get there. But I also think at the same time, what I notice in older people, especially older people that are in good shape, good health, good condition, is that they're like, I guarantee you, if you talk to this guy, this 100-year-old guy, he would be very happy and very optimistic and very positive and joyful to just be alive and be
here. Yeah, 100%.
Right? I don't see very many, you know, grumpy old people that are in great condition.
Well, if he's grumpy and old, he probably wouldn't have done the race.
That's true. And I'm sure that you could find me a 100-year-old person that's super grumpy and a humbug. But I think your mentality has a bit to do with it, too, especially as you get to that age. Just happy, enjoying life, and making the right decisions, but also not taking everything too seriously.
Right.
Because that stress of taking stuff too seriously, I think, can cause some issues in the long term.
Yeah. Well, the approach you gave, which was focusing on, hey, I got to make the choices for long-term health, right? And I think that, you know, for me, there's a little bit of a personality into that. I have short-term goals that fall into naturally into that equation, right? And because I think we've talked before in this podcast that if I don't have something I'm working towards, I kind of meander around the gym and pick things out that, you know, if I have a very particular goal that I'm trying to achieve, that's it'd be a short-term goal compared to, you know, getting into my 80s and 90s. But if I had if I was shooting down, it's like, hey, I just want to be healthy, so I'll work towards that. I'm not sure about my personality doing that. But because I have short-term goals, I'm much more focused on what I'm doing. And that happens to just play into longevity.
I do. I think that's a very good point. I would agree with you 100%. You have to have some of those short-term things to keep you going.
Right.
So you're not just wandering waywardly.
Well, it's like I have a client. He's 71, and he weighs 180 pounds, and his goal is he would like to bench his weight, which we'll see. I haven't told him he can't do it, but it's something that We got some technique to work on and a back to get stronger and shoulders to get healthier before we go to that kind of weight, mm-hmm. right? We can definitely get them stronger. But, you know, and that's what we've been working on for months now is just stronger back. You know, the first time he'd bench, you know, his left shoulder would just grind, right? And now he's able to hold his shoulder back and there's no grinding. So that was step one. So these are all things that when you want to achieve goals, you're at that age, you have to take steps before you try to do something like that or you're going to get injured. So.
Yeah, I would agree. So interesting. Certainly a great story. It was from a few years ago, but still a cool video. If you guys haven't seen it, look it up. It's Orville Rogers, 100-year-old, 60-meter dash.
Was he 104?
It said 100. I don't know. Oh, okay. Maybe it was the 100-year-old and then over division. Maybe he was 104. I don't know, but it said 100-year-old.
Yeah.
So I know he's at least 100.
Okay.
So next thing we've got here, another little tidbit that most of you guys probably heard about, is United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson, who was shot this week.
I know.
And killed. And it brings up sort of a, obviously, very unfortunate situation, but it brings up kind of another topic. We were talking a little bit before we jumped on the podcast with Jeff about insurance
mm-hmm.
and health insurance and some of the shady things that seem to be going on and some of the movement away from traditional health insurance. And this is kind of just another situation that backs that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think is going on with that whole situation with the CEO being shot?
Well, I mean, I will say that they found 3 shell casings where I think they shot him 3 times, if I'm not mistaken. And I can't remember. One was says defund or they all started with D. Do you remember what those 3 words were? I can't remember now.
I don't, but I could find it.
Yeah, it was the shell casings had 3 words. Each one had different words on there, and which what's about as premeditated as you can be.
Yeah,
you know these shell casings are going to hit the ground, and you know they're going to find these shell casings, and each one has a different word.
Yeah, denied. Defend and depose.
Depose. Okay. Yeah,
what's the word?
So my thought process was that maybe this is someone that was either denied insurance or a family member was denied insurance. I don't know. It's hard to know, but it's obviously someone who was disgruntled and had a very clear intent of killing this particular person. Now, if this is geared towards insurance companies or just someone that with that insurance company, we don't know that yet because they haven't found the guy, right?
No, not that I've heard of. Seems like it was a professional job.
Yeah.
The guy got away.
Yeah.
Like he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing.
They even caught him on they caught the whole thing on security tape.
I know.
You know, I'm sure if you've seen the video going around, you can see the video of it happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it was... It was alarming, but it was obviously, like I said, it was you can't get any more premeditated than that.
Yeah, and I noticed it brought out a lot of people telling stories about their experience with insurance, health insurance claims,
right,
and denials and stuff. And then there was a lot of them, but like one of them, a guy was talking about his daughter needing a certain medication for her seizures.
Right.
And they went to the doctor and there was only one medication that was approved by their insurance to use for this condition. And so they had to use that even though they knew that it wasn't going to work because mm-hmm. they tried it before, but the insurance says you have to take this medication first.
Right.
And so they got his daughter on the medication because that was the only thing their insurance would cover. And the only way they could get a different medication covered is if they tried this and it didn't work. So they had to try it. And she like had a bunch of extra seizures because of this new medication.
Right.
And they knew that was going to happen, but they still had to do it anyway. And so her health deteriorated significantly through taking this medication. And then once it didn't work, then, okay, now the insurance is approving the drug that they knew they needed the whole time. And the doctor knew that she needed the whole time. And there are many more stories like that, but just the denial of claims, the rules and regulations. You know, we talked to just a, was it 2 weeks ago? We talked to Catherine and her struggles with getting insurance to cover an MRI on her knee that was clearly had something wrong with it.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's time and time again, these situations where you buy health insurance so that you can be insured in cases where things go wrong. And then your insurance wants to deny everything and not pay for it. You might as well not even have the insurance.
Well, this has been going on for 50 years. Insurance has been run the same way. I remember when I was growing up as a kid and sitting down and talking in with my dad, and, you know, he would tell me that, you know, he'd file, they'd deny it, and he'd have to go through the process of, you know, reclaiming that or claiming it again and or arguing with them, and then they'd finally cover it. And he said that was almost all his claims. Okay, so and so the reason insurance does that is because there's going to be a percentage of people that won't fight it.
And right? There's all their profits, right?
They're 100%.
Everything they don't have to pay is profit for them.
Yeah, and I've had to do it too. So, you know, and that's how they operate, is that they will come up with a reason that they won't cover it. And then as soon as you complain about it, then some either you'll have to jump through a couple more hoops or they'll go ahead and cover it. So and then you have the other side of it, that sometimes I don't think these insurance companies communicate very well with these doctors or these medical institutions. And what you end up having is that we just went through with my son. He had a, gosh, what did he have done? Oh, a root canal. And he had to have two impacted teeth taken out. No, not a root canal. He had two impacted teeth. He had to have his back molars taken out. And so when he did that, the insurance company had told us that, well, this is what you'll be paying and this is how much it is. And when we got there, they says, no, you got to cover the whole thing. We're like, no, because it, you know, your insurance doesn't cover this. Says, yes, it does. So instead of getting an argument right there at the counter, because my son is like, you know, barely walking at that moment because he just came out of anesthesia. You know, we needed to get him home. We paid the whole thing. And then the insurance company came back and was like, no, that's not right. And so I had to go communicate with them. And then now we're being refunded the money that we all paid out. So,
but you got to fight for it.
Yeah, you got to fight for it. Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, you know, we were just talking about this earlier. It's like when I was doing a lot of marketing, one of our clients that we did work for was a cash pay orthopedic doctor. I think he was down in Tulsa, if I'm not mistaken. And all the prices for what they did for orthopedic surgery were very reasonable. You know, like $3,000 on a knee, you know, $2,000 on, you know, for a shoulder or an elbow or something like that. I mean, they were all reasonable. And there was a couple, you know, $6,000 and $8,000 surgeries, but all reasonable for what they were doing, right? You know, and then he was cash pay only, you know, because he got tired of dealing with insurance. And this is, you know, 7 years ago. So, and now we're seeing more and more of that starting to happen because of the issues you see with insurance.
Yeah, because a lot of times the doctors themselves don't even like the insurance.
No,
they got to deal with them. They got to fight and negotiate with them. They end up making less. Right. The customer pays more.
Right.
The doctor makes less and the insurance company makes all the profit.
Right.
Whereas, you know, when you go to these cash based situations, you can save money as a as a customer. And then the doctor can actually make more money even by charging less. And then the insurance company doesn't get a cut out of it. that's what's becoming kind of popular that I've noticed is health sharing plans instead of insurance plans. That's what my family's on, mm-hmm. instead of traditional insurance, because they're basically they're nonprofits, most of them anyway.
Yeah.
And they are cash pay based. So as a customer, you go into the doctor, you're cash pay. You pay your bill and then you submit it to them and then they reimburse you. But you get the cash pay price all the time that way.
Mm.
And then they're just working off the cash pay price. So they don't come in before the billing and negotiate with the doctor and all this stuff. They come in after the fact. You go into the doctor, say, you know, okay, I have a health sharing plan, but I'm cash pay. You get a significantly reduced price, sometimes
right.
half off, sometimes even less.
Less than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you either send the bill to them or you pay it and then send them the receipt and they pay you the amount for it. It's worked out good for us so far. And they'll cover
lots of things. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. And you don't have any networks or doctors. You just go to whoever you want to go to for medical care, and then you submit it.
Hmm.
This worked out very well, and it's, I would say, I haven't got a quote on what our whole family would be, but I remember back when I was just doing it for myself, it was probably three to four times cheaper than traditional insurance.
So how much were you, if you don't mind me asking, how much were you paying as an individual?
It was right at like $100 a month.
Nice. Okay. So do you know what family rates are?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the company that you go with. But, you know, a family might pay $300 or $400 or $500, you know, somewhere in there.
Well, you want to take a gander how much we pay?
I would guess you guys probably pay a couple thousand a month.
And it'd be about $3,500 a month. Yeah. And fortunately... her company pays 75% of that.
No, that's good.
Yeah. But, and then we pay the rest, but it's outrageous how much they're getting.
Yeah. I can't remember. I want to say my parents is, yeah, something like 3,000 a month.
It's insane.
Yeah.
You know,
it's getting ridiculous and yeah. It's not sustainable.
No, it's not sustainable.
Something has to change.
Well, and it's going to change either because the financials aren't going to be able to be maintained, either from down to the purchaser or up to, you know, between the insurer or the hospitals, because so people don't realize this. Every insurance company negotiate. You can have one hospital, and insurance companies will come in and they will negotiate. All of them will negotiate different percentages. Okay. Different percentages. So if you have insurance A and I have insurance B and we both get the same surgery, exact same, they will get a different rate for you than they did for me. That's how insurance works.
Which is why they always want to know your insurance before you go in there, is because they can set your prices and stuff based on what insurance you have, based on the agreement that they have.
So you can't call them if you have insurance. You can't call them and them give you a price.
No.
It doesn't work that way. You know, so that's one of the biggest disadvantages of, you know, because in my experience, it's been 3 to 4 times more that the cost of that procedure is with insurance.
Oh, yeah. A lot of times, yes. And, yeah, they won't give you that information, even cash pay a lot of times. I've had that experience where you call up, I just need to know, you know, this is the service or whatever that I need. What's the price? Well, we can't tell you, you know, after you're done, you find out. And it's ridiculous, but price transparency is going to be a big thing. I think if you can get some doctors that take cash pay on their services and they're very transparent with their pricing, they would do really well.
Well, what other business do you know in America that functions like that?
None that stay in business.
Yeah. So that's not capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, and we talked about it before. The problem with insurance is that you have to buy insurance within your state. Okay. my dad was talking about this in the 80s, okay? That, and it's still the same way. Break down those borders. Allow me to buy insurance from anybody I want from anywhere in America, okay? Then you have true capitalism. That would fix a lot, if not everything, because now everyone has to compete, you know? Maybe the insurance in Oklahoma is far better than anything we get in Kansas. Well, now Kansas has to either match it or give lower rates to accommodate to the value of what they offer, right? So if I'm offering a premium product, then I'll pay for that premium product, or your clients will pay for that premium product. So if Kansas products aren't as good, and they can't match it because they don't have the resources, then the price needs to come down, right? So now that's what capitalism is, right? And that doesn't exist in the medical community. It's insane.
Mm-hmm. So. No, it doesn't. And we can only hope that changes continue to take place. But as consumers, we need to vote with our dollars.
Yes.
Metaphorically, because we need to take our business to places that are doing it the way that's best for us, not best for the insurance companies.
Yeah.
And they're out there and they're starting to pop up. Be mindful of that when you're thinking about primary care physicians, where you're seeking medical treatment, where you're buying your insurance from. You know, look into these things, because a lot of people, you know, the insurance, the big insurance, they don't want you to know that there's stuff like health sharing plans or what cash pay prices would be and things like that. I know of a story of a guy who owns a pharmacy, and he said that he has contracts with insurance companies. You know, they go in and they negotiate the prices, kind of like you talked about, and they'll have certain prices for certain drugs. So he is required, if somebody comes in and they have insurance A, say United Healthcare, right? They will say, okay, his deal is he has to charge $10 for the prescription because through their insurance, or $10 copay, whatever their insurance is. Then he keeps $2 and he gives $8 of that to the insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
However, he's like, the same drug, the cash pay price is $5. And he said his cost in it is $1. So he
makes four.
So he would make four. So he said, if somebody comes in the door and they're just cash pay, they want this drug, he said, they pay me $5 and I make $4. Pretty good deal.
Yeah.
But if somebody comes in and has the insurance, they got to pay $10. He only keeps two of it. It cost him $1, so he only makes $1. So the customer pays double, and he makes less than half of the money,
right,
if insurance is involved.
Right.
But he said because of the contracts that they have to sign with to have the insurance, he's not allowed to even tell them that they could get a cheaper price, because he'd be breaking his insurance contract, and then he'd be breach a contract, and they could drop him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a shady system. I mean, it's what I call a shady legal system, because it's allowed, and you know, no other businesses are allowed to run like this.
Hmm.
Okay, and it's regulated to do this. So you know, this is something that, like my dad before he passed, he was adamant that they need to break down the borders. Okay, they have to break these down and make it true capitalism. And he said that would fix all our problems. That was his belief. And because today, you know, if I want to buy insurance, I have to buy it around here. You know, it's just, it shouldn't be that way, right? If I want to, all other services, if I want to buy them in another state, if I want to hire, let's say, a videographer, I can hire them in California, send my files to them, have them edit it, and send it back. I'm not, you know, regulated to do it here. Right?
Yeah, it has to do a lot with the regulations, mm-hmm. right? Insurance is a highly, highly regulated industry. And the reason is because if I pay you for insurance on something and then I need to use it, I need to make sure you have the money to pay me back.
Right.
You know, if I buy health insurance and then I need a knee replacement and I go in and I've been paying you health insurance for 10 years and I need my knee replacement, well, you better have the money that I've been paying you. So there's tons of regulations and tons of review that go into it. And each state has their own Department of Insurance, and they have regulations that the states have to follow. And so when these companies come in and they want to write insurance in a specific state, they have to make sure they follow the laws of that state. And that's why prices can differ state to state, is because if you offer it in that state, you have to follow the regulations of that state. And so that's where the differences come from. And that's why you'll hear, you know, stories about certain insurance companies will stop writing policies in a certain state.
Right.
Because, you know, a lot of times there's an issue going on with the way the insurance department is in that company, and they just say, we don't want to even insure in this state anymore. So
right.
That's why you end up with that different state to state. And there is also a national association insurance commission too, but there are more specifics at the state level a lot of times. Mm-hmm.
Well, you also have, and maybe this plays into it. I'm not going to pretend I know all the, because I don't, I want to say my thought is that they had an initial seed reason why they did it the way they did, which was, you know, to be as regulated as it is. You know, because if you go into a hospital, they can't deny you. Like, you know, if you got a serious, you know, like you're got your arm cut off, you know, they can't deny you. They have to treat you, right? But and that may play into, you know, they might haunt you for the rest of your life if you don't have the money to pay for that surgery. But, you know, there's probably some of that ability to treat anyone that needs treatment, you know, plays into the reason it's so regulated.
Yeah, it's kind of like anything with governments, regulations, things like that. It probably all starts with good intentions, and then it becomes an evil.
Yes.
Over time.
Yeah, and so I think there's ways to bring capitalism back into that system, and because here's the thing. There's a lot of massive purchases that, I mean, because when you're doing surgery, it's a massive purchase, right? Mm-hmm. And the first thing we have to remove from our mindset is that a lot of people believe that healthcare is a right. It's not a right. It's a commodity, just like anything else, mm-hmm. you know? And so that's why you make smart decisions, so you don't put yourself, it's like taking care of your car. You know, you don't take care of your car, you can be paying a lot of money on it, right?
Yeah.
You take care of your body, you know, so you don't have to pay a lot of money on it.
Well, and that's something that's another little can of worms when it comes to health insurance, is I don't like the fact that me as a healthy individual, that could I need my health insurance? Of course I might need my health insurance. But it's a lot less likely than somebody who's very unhealthy.
Yes.
And so why should the rates be the same? And a lot of times they are. They're virtually the same rates person to person, and somebody who uses their health insurance all the time and is on 18 medications and goes to the doctor all the time and needs treatments and things all the time pays the same as somebody who doesn't ever use it. And but you also don't want to not have insurance in case something catastrophic happens, it's out of your control. So there needs to be kind of a middle ground there, where there's a product for people who don't use their insurance on a day-to-day basis all the time, but at the same time it's there if they need it for catastrophes or something, which is kind of what the high deductible plans were originally for. But you know, because of the cost getting so high, a lot of people are shifting to the higher deductible plans, and so you're seeing a lot, you don't have as great of a health on the high deductible plans as
right.
You used to. So there's no great answers, and there's no fixing it. We certainly can't fix it sitting here today talking about it. But
well, I mean, you mentioned not getting a fair shake. You're more healthy than the majority of people you are that get insurance. So technically, you should not be able to have to pay as much.
You would think.
Yeah.
But
you know, it's kind of like when my son became a driver on our insurance skyrocketed. We just added my daughter to our insurance for driving, and our insurance dropped. Okay. That's because male drivers versus female drivers are looked very differently.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, you could make the argument. It's like, well, shouldn't they just do a test to see how good they are? You know, but again, I can't say anything about that. But I think it's even more true when it comes to your health insurance. Because you get to my age, I pay a lot more than you do. Okay. I'd say I'm in pretty good health. So I don't think that's exactly fair.
Well, I have a different health insurance plan.
Right.
That's part of it.
Well, yeah, that, I'm just saying just in general.
If right? I went and got a policy yes. of the same company that you went to, I would pay a lot less than you.
Yes.
That is accurate.
Yeah, yes. that's what I'm referring to. Is I'm not referring to you necessarily as an individual, but we're both healthy individuals. We both went to the same insurance program. We'd be viewed differently. Okay? And, you know, I was like, well, aren't you going to, like, look at my vitals? You know.
But they don't.
They don't.
But see, the crazy part is life insurance will do that. If you get life insurance, they
yes,
will
they
look
do.
At all that stuff.
They
but
do.
Health insurance won't.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
100%.
It's messed up world. But anyway, let's move on
okay.
to our next topic. We're going to cover with our remaining time, switch gears a little bit and talk about the holidays and how we can stay on track and stay somewhat good during the holidays. It's so easy to fall off the wagon, get off your meal plan, get inconsistent in the gym, and just be out of whack. And we want to help you guys out with staying on track or getting back on track if you already fell off track, right? We went through Thanksgiving. You know, I know it's easy to think before Thanksgiving, oh, I'm gonna nail it during the holidays. I'm going to keep my gym schedule up. I'm going to keep my nutrition fine. I'm not eating any of that pumpkin pie or, you know, I'm staying good. And then Thanksgiving hits and you realize, oh, that wasn't as easy as I thought.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to get it back on track. We got to have a good December. Matt, talk to me a little bit about what you do through the holidays, because I know you have a very regimented plan that helps you stay on track in situations like this. What does that look like for you?
Well, we always travel for Thanksgiving. And for the last... good, probably the last 6 years or so, I call the city, or scratch that, I call the gyms in that area and find who has, you know, a week passes, you know, what their rates are, what equipment they have, and then their hours of operation. I find all that out, right? And so that I can have access. Once I find the gym I want, then I either pay them. Usually I'm paying them for because I'll get there on like on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and I'm there usually until Saturday or Sunday, so I usually pay for the week. And so you're looking at anywhere between, you know, 20 to, you know, probably $40, 20 to 40. I've never think I've paid 50, but $20 to $40 for the week that you are paying to use their gym for that week. Some just have day passes, so you'd be paying like $10 a day. And then the next step is I go shopping the Saturday before, and I buy all the food I know I'm going to be eating, because I eat more often than everyone else. Like I'm eating every, you know, 2.5 hours. So I pack my own cooler, right? And I got that big, you know, probably 3 foot by 2 foot by, you know, 2.5 or 3 foot cooler, which takes up the majority of the room in the trunk. And I pack that thing full of everything I know I'm going to be eating. So I don't have to go and depend on wait for everyone to make their turkey sides and turkey dinners and all that. I'm eating the moment I get there. I'm eating every 2.5 hours during the day. So that is all planned out. And so I hit my macros and I hit my workout schedule. I don't miss a beat. So, and on Thanksgiving Day, I go ahead and include what I'm going to be eating in my macros for that day, which is great because turkey's high protein. So I eat a lot of turkey, you know. And I also, and you know, I'll eat some you know, of the desserts that day that I typically don't eat, you know, because it's one day. So it's very mapped out for me, and I found it to be fairly easy to do. But I will tell you that when I have talked to all my clients that have come back so far from Thanksgiving, every single one of them fell off the wagon. Not one locked in. Now they did, and I shouldn't say it like that. I said that kind of negatively, but they did eat in moderation. So that's fair, but not. I don't think any of them worked out. Right, there was no working out through the from Tuesday through Sunday. Right, so I go every day. Then when I'm there, I'm like hit the gym, and I'm usually going, you know, early morning, so I'm not interrupting family activities. So that's kind of what I do.
What about as it comes to Christmas time, all the activities surrounding that? Because do you travel for Christmas?
No, I'm here for Christmas.
So what does it look like when you're staying around here?
Well, pretty much the same thing. It's just that, you know, I've started, since I've been at the gym in the last 3 weeks, I cook all my prep meals here at the gym, you know. So this last week I cooked up a little over 2 pounds of steak. And I've had a steak every day, and I've got one left for today. And then I make sure, you know, and I've hit, you know, 3,400, 3,500 calories several days now. I've been really working hard to get that intake up, eating every 2 hours. And I've been doing better about that because, you know, what my goal is, I'm trying to gain some weight. And so, and it won't change much for Christmas, right? You know, I'm at home, so nothing's really going to change. I'm just going to take a couple days off. I'll go ahead and, you know, have my cheat day on Christmas Day and probably a cheat day on New Year's Day. So I think a lot of people, and it's kind of true for all kinds of travel, people kind of follow, they don't put in the time to prepare for the travel, which, if you think about it, just giving a little thought, it's not that hard. So,
yeah, it all boils down to thinking ahead, knowing what you're facing, knowing what you've got in front of you, and devising a plan, and then following it. That's what you do.
I try, and what makes it easier, because a lot of people fall. This is the key. I just thought of this. This is the key. So a lot of people fell on Thanksgiving or travel because they're around friends and family, right? I try to get a lot of my eating in when I'm not annoying the family, or my exercise in when I'm not doing it during family events. So I try to keep it all separate, making it easy. Right? I don't wait and do my weight training when everyone wants to go to the lake. You know, for the family outing. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I got to go work out. No, that didn't. By the time we start our family activities, I've been up 2 or 3 hours already, right? So that's what's made it easier, is that I've compartmentalized my workout and my eating separate from the activities of the family, so that I'm not influenced to do something different.
Well, and this is something that I'm sure has an effect. You talk about Thanksgiving, you talk about going to the store and buying all your stuff ahead of time and then taking it with you. If you don't eat it, it goes to waste. So,
right.
You know, that one decision of going to the store, planning everything out and getting everything, it almost kind of forces you to follow it, because mm-hmm. you don't want to throw all that away.
100%. Yeah.
So you're going to cook it and you're going to follow it. Just like if you go to the gym, you know, all you need is that first day you go to the gym, you buy the pass, whatever. Well, now you've paid for it, you might as well use it. Right. And so it's kind of a commitment level.
Right.
You go ahead and you commit, and then it's easier to follow it.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. So I think that's what, you know, as we talk about this and we start going into travel and stuff, with our clients. That's something that we should probably have more discussions with our clients, is how they prepare for travel.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I understand if you, now, let's say you're getting on a plane. Cooler's not real functional, right? So then you have, and I've done that. So let's say I'm traveling. So the next step is I'm calling ahead and finding out where I'm going to purchase my food, right? Way, I don't wait till I get there. It's too much time sitting on the phone, because you don't realize how much time you waste trying to find where to get the good food, right?
You especially can, in a new place.
In a new place. Right. And you don't know who you're, where to go or who to talk to. You kind of have to like be a detective and start talking to the right people. And that takes a few phone calls. I've done that. And so, you know, but when you're going into another city, you kind of have to check around. Well, do they have Sprouts? If they don't have Sprouts, do they have Whole Foods? And where are they located, right? I can get some of my stuff there. You know, it's not as good as Farm Fresh, but it's a step, just a step below it. So, you know, and if you can find out where the farmers markets are, you know, that's, it'll take some phone calls. Call the city. Some cities will have farmers markets. So, you know, that's so when we've flown by plane, I've said, okay, well, I'm not going to bring all my dairy stuff with me. I'm going to wait till I get there. And then the first thing we're going to do is go buy. And which is what we did when we went out to Denver. I'm sorry, not Denver. We went out to Scottsdale to see my dad. We got there. We went and bought our food, stocked up, ready to go.
Yeah. I would agree that's the best way to do it. It's also the best way to do it even if you're staying at home. You know, planning out your meals for the week and what you're going to eat, because it's a lot easier to not eat junk when you're satiated than it is when you're hungry.
Right. 100%.
And so it makes it a lot easier if you have your meals planned out and you've already ate and you're like, okay, you guys are having some junk, there's some stuff there, but I'm not even really that hungry. Versus if you, you know, you hadn't ate anything and you come in and there's like a bunch of big batch of cookies that you're like, oh man, and you start scarfing them down because you're hungry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I've been pretty good about, even when I am around that kind of food, that I just don't eat it. Now, I did give in recently. On full disclosure, I went to the bank the other day and they had a bowl of Snickers there. And I thought, oh, I'm going to have me a mini Snickers. So I had one.
There you go.
Yeah. So I think it's this, you know, setting clear goals, mapping out your schedule of when you're going to do things as to your holiday schedule. Because a lot of times we know what we're going to do during our holidays and I map around that.
Yeah. Big thing too is don't have an all or nothing mindset, because that's what gets a lot of people in trouble.
Oh, good point.
And I don't know. I guess it kind of makes sense. It never really made sense to me, but people are either all in or all out. They're either going to the gym every day, they're on their meal plan perfectly, they're just, everything's great. Or if they fall off the wagon, they just fall off the wagon once, then they use that as an excuse to just keep falling off the wagon time after time after time.
Yeah.
And then it's, well, I ate something bad this morning, so now the whole day's shot. So then, well, then the whole week. Well, then it's holidays, so the whole month. And the next thing you know, they're just like, ah, oh, whatever, just December, throw it out the window, right? I'll get back on track January 1st. All you're doing is destroying your progress.
Yeah.
You know, if you do something like that, let it linger. Because like we said, me and Matt both believe in having opportunities to go off of our meal plan.
Yeah, 100%.
Cheat meals, eat things that we know are not healthy for us. But we don't. One thing we don't allow it to do is to string into all day, day after day, week after week, whole month long, something like that. We don't allow that to happen. I still eat desserts that are good, foods that I don't normally eat during Christmas time, during the holidays.
Right.
But it's here and there. And it's okay, if I allow myself to do this, then I'm going to get up and go to the gym in the morning, and I'm going to eat, you know, my meals exactly like I am supposed to the next, you know, week.
Right.
Right. That was one of the things I was excited about, running the turkey trot.
Yeah. We need to talk about that. We haven't talked about that.
But it was get up in the morning. I didn't eat anything, you know, before. I fasted, ran it fasted. And then ran the turkey trot 5K. You know, come home, got showered up, got ready, whatever. Went over and had Thanksgiving meal. And, you know, I hadn't had any bad food throughout the day yet. I had ran a 5K, you know, like it felt good. And so then it was a bit easier for me to just say, okay, well, maybe for Thanksgiving dinner, I'm not going to be super. I might have a dessert or two. And then, you know, the next day, you get right back on track and then you're good. What are you looking at over there?
I want to know what you ran.
What I ran?
Yeah. What was your time?
I think it was just under 30 minutes.
For a 5K?
Yeah. It was pretty slow.
So that would have been, 5K is how many miles?
3.1.
Okay. So 3.1. So about a 10-minute mile pace.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is slower than I thought, but there was some different factors that played into that. Because I did run a 26 a couple months back. And so I thought I was going to be closer to that, but there was 1,300 people there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was crazy. I've never run in a race like that before. Your shoulder to shoulder.
That's a decent amount of people.
You know, everyone's got to fit through a 10-foot wide start-finish line to start.
Did your wife run the 5K too?
Yes, she did.
Okay.
And, you know, I had to wait a couple minutes to even hardly get started because everyone's funneling through that starting line. It was not that fun. The real feel was only like 15 degrees or something, 20 Ooh. Degrees.
What did Amber run?
It's about the same.
Oh, she stayed back with you? Yeah.
I think I did pretty good. I was like 200 and something out of 1,300 people.
That's not bad.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah. Wow, there's a lot of slow runners.
Like I said, I thought I was booking it. She checked the result because you have a tracker or something that will tell you your time if you look it up. They did, and so she looked it up, and that's what it was. So,
very good, very good.
Yeah, well, first 5K in the books.
I'm not sure. I mean, I used to run pretty fast, but I don't know if I could do 30 minutes right now.
Oh yeah, yeah. I hadn't ran in a while. I dropped the ball on my training. I didn't really train for it the mm-hmm. way that I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't very prepared.
Yeah. But I bet Amber came in like, felt like she didn't even run.
I don't know. I don't remember.
I mean, Amber could probably do like, what, 7-8 minute mile pace?
Well, I don't know about right now, but I know when she was running, she said, I think her best 5K was 22.
Yeah, that's pretty fast.
But, you know, coming off postpartum, having the baby and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. 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 So I was going to say, I when I was in my 20s, I think I ran something, I ran a 5K in like 18 something.
Wow.
Yeah. That was a long time ago. But I was like a 6-minute mile pace all the way. But
no, I couldn't.
Dude, I can't even run a quarter of a mile at 6-minute mile pace. I'd be laying on the ground. So
I don't know. I started out pretty good. I was feeling really confident until it was in Swope Park, and they just throughout the park on some, it was all pavement, but we were going along, it's probably like halfway through, and we start going down this real steep hill, and I was like, oh man. And all of a sudden, because I was, you know, I wasn't right in the front, right? So I'm going down this hill, and all of a sudden look over, here comes people running back up the hill. I said, uh-oh, that means when we get to the bottom, we have to turn around and come back up.
Oh, man.
So I made all the way to the bottom, and it's just a U-turn, and then you go right back up the steep hill. And I'm getting up the hill, and I'm like, my pace dropped significantly about that time.
Yeah, well, that's probably why you were around 10 minutes. So did you and Amber just stay together?
We weren't right together, but we were pretty close.
Yeah.
It was hard at the beginning. There's so many people, we couldn't hardly stayed next to each other.
Cause, man, right.
Those runners are intense, like elbows and getting thrown and stuff. And getting, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, so I think, you know, going back on the, it kind of speaks to one thing we need to remind our trainees is that we need to prioritize self-care, right? Make sure that that is paramount of that, because yes, you can go to Thanksgiving, fall off the wagon, don't work out, eat bad for 3 or 4 days, you know, and you can recover from it, right? I find when I do that, I can feel it set me back. Like if I do 4 days of just terrible eating, eating whenever I want, not sleeping good, don't work out at all. I mean, if I miss a day of training, I'm like, you know, like I missed yesterday because I had a migraine and I was like, but there's nothing I can do about it. But at the same time, I always tell, I'm okay with that because it's about being consistent, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where we have to allow, you know, you talk about, well, I'm not going to be able to work out on Thursday, so I'm not going to work out on Wednesday and Friday, right? Well, that's just that it's about, you know, you have to figure those things in, right? You have to figure in that there's going to be times I'm going to not eat exactly what I want to eat. And when that happens, or I'm not going to get in a particular day because something that I have a wedding to go to or something like that, right? Those have to be figured in. They shouldn't be the stumbling block that when you don't eat right or you go to a wedding, boom, I'm off. Might as well not do the next day of nutrition, the next day of working out.
You have to decide beforehand that, okay, yes, I know I have this event and I have this holiday, whatever, but I'm going to get back on track the next day.
Right.
Make a plan in advance, because if you don't have a plan, that's when it's easy to just stay off the wagon.
100%.
I get back from vacation on a Sunday, so Monday morning I'm in the gym and I'm meal prepping and I'm back on my plan, you know. Or
right.
Thanksgiving's on a Thursday, so that means that Friday we're in the gym and we're, you know, eating the prepped meals or the meals that I planned out, not mm-hmm. just the whatever leftovers are from Thanksgiving, so it doesn't bleed into the future days. I think that's the best way to do it in this holiday season is have your planned times, you know, plan them out in advance. Hey, I have a Christmas party, you know, this day, you know, Thanksgiving Day, and then, you know, Christmas Eve, we're doing this. So have your planned things mm-hmm. in advance. Know that those are your times and that's okay that those are your times, that you're going to maybe fall off the wagon for that event or that thing. But then make sure around that you're also planning how you're going to get back on track right afterwards.
Have you seen this new thing called the six-pack abs pack? The six-packs abs bag. Have you seen these things?
A bag? What do you mean?
They make different. It's a meal carrier.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's called the six-pack bag. Six-pack abs bag, okay? And I actually, one of our clients here in the gym was showing it to me. He had me pull it up online, and I was like, that is the coolest thing.
Is it one of those that fits like 40 meals or something
like
that?
Well, it has one like that. It has different sizes, right?
Yeah.
The one he was showing me fit 4 meals.
Oh.
Right? Or you can do 3 meals.
Like a day's worth.
Like a day's worth, 100%, yeah.
Okay.
And has the cooler... it has the cooling bags with it that are part of the structure that you can unzip, put in the fridge, take it out, put it back in, and then it closes up against the meals. And I said, that's pretty cool, you know. And it was, you have to look that up. And so he showed me that. It's like, man, I might have to utilize that at some point because there's times that, you know, I can make my meals at home, and that's the problem. When you're making meals at home, you know, getting them here and having them, you know, it's just kind of cumbersome. And you know, I know you make meals for a lot of people, so how do you travel with those?
Coolers,
yeah,
coolers. But then I also try to avoid them being in the coolers any longer than they have to. So if in transport in the cooler, but then they're like right back in the fridge,
right.
That's been the best thing that I found, and I haven't really had any issues.
How many meals are you up to now?
Oh, not that many now. I think around 30 per week, something like that.
Okay.
It's not a ton. Not as much as it was at one point.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's a service we need to open up here.
It could. It's just, it's a lot, you know.
Yeah.
So.
It's a lot of work because you guys were doing that on Sunday.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. So, do you have any other ideas on traveling for?
I'm not much of a traveler, so I'm not sure I have the best travel tips and plans because I've never traveled for the holidays before. My family is located here. Mm-hmm. My wife's family is located here. So, you know, it's just driving over to a place for a day,
right,
type of thing. So I don't really have the travel tips necessarily. Like you would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, for those that stay in town and still fall off the wagon, it's...
Which there are a lot of those too.
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, you know, I don't think any of my clients that I've trained after Thanksgiving said that they worked out.
December is the lowest attendance month of the gym out of all the months in the year. Least attendance. Whether, and that goes for whether you're a 24-hour gym, come in and do your own workout, personal training, group classes. I mean, all the types of gyms, fitness, December is the lowest attendance.
I can see that argument being made. I didn't know that was actually true, though. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, most likely because of New Year's and Christmas.
Yeah, all the holidays. People get busy. You know, that's another thing that is a problem this time of year that I found. It just gets busy.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're in your normal schedule, say like, I don't know, what, September, right? Just there's nothing crazy going on in September.
Right.
And everyone's, you know, your schedules are normal. You can fit your normal activities in, your normal gym sessions in, your normal meal prepping time, cooking time, whatever, grocery shopping time. You come around to December and things get busy and you got events here and events there and nights of the week and weekends, and it takes up your gym time. It takes up your meal prepping time. You got to focus on other things like Christmas shopping and all that stuff. And the gym and your health become secondary for temporarily.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but understand what that means. Understand that you're working in the wrong direction when that happens, and that you're going to have ground to make up when you come out of there. If you let December be bad, November, December be bad, and you lose progress, it's going to take you at least the amount of time that you were off the wagon to get it back, if not double.
Right.
A lot of times it's double. So if you're off the wagon for a month, it might take you 2 months to get back on and get back where you were.
Right.
And then you're talking, you know, so if you are off the wagon all of December and you get back on in January, well, it might take you till the end of February before you're really back on track. And now you have just a couple months before summertime, you know, when a lot of people want to be in their best shape.
They get to the middle of November and then you don't sign. This is true for some people. You get to the middle of November and you don't see them until January.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Don't wait till January 1st, guys.
No.
There's nothing wrong with December 7th.
No.
Or by the time you guys listen to it, December 8th, probably.
Yeah. But. Yeah. So get on board, you know, get in here. We have picked up several new clients in our gym here at Anytime Fitness and Lee Summit, where we have picked up memberships and personal training clients just in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So I think that's, you know, people are kind of settling down after the election. I'm expecting January to be a big boom. At least that's my hope. Guys, it's a lifestyle. Don't wait for seasonal fitness.
Yep. The only better day to start your journey or get back on track with your journey, the only better day than today is yesterday.
Yeah, I was going to say today, but that's even better. It's yesterday. All right. Well, we just finished episode 43.
Exciting stuff, guys. Thanks for joining us. If you've been along with us this whole journey, we want to especially thank you guys, because this has been a long journey for us. It's almost been a year now.
I think
we're approaching, you know, we haven't hit every week, but we were approaching a year of having this podcast. We've grown a lot. Lots changed in that year, but we're really excited about where we are, and we're excited about continuing to bring you great guests and great content and just help you guys be as healthy as you can be.
100%. So did we say anything about the doctor who's coming in January? I have a guest coming in January.
Yeah, we might as well tease that.
Yeah, so we have Dr. Alexander, who is going to be with us either January 4th or January 11th, so I'm looking forward to that. So definitely be listening for that at the beginning of the year. She's going to bring us a lot of insight from her side of the equation when it comes to fitness.
We'll have to ask her about insurance.
Yes, we will. That'll be a question. So, all right, guys. We'll see you next week.
All right, thanks, guys.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.